Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at the website, stevebick.com, after a huge Saturday. That was a lot of horse racing, to say the least. It was satisfying, right? There was just enough, I think, assortment of, you know, less than obvious. We've been complaining about, or not complaining, but we've been grousing a little about how chalky the big Saturdays have been. Well, there was a nice assortment of mid-priced type winners. And that, you know, that includes both of the big three-year-old male races. I don't want to take away from Tiz the Bomb, who performed up to expectation as fave. In fact, we'll talk to Kenny McPeak early this morning. But Cyberknife and White Abario, you know, both priced right for the backers, without a doubt. And on that topic, actually, thinking about the price on Cyberknife, $1,360. He was third choice. We're going to talk to Al Gold, as promised, right? You heard Al in the background at OBS a couple of weeks ago. And Al said, I'm not coming on again until I win a grade one. Okay. It's arranged. It's happened. We've done it. You've done it. Brad Cox at Cyberknife. Really good effort and a terrific, absolutely terrific ride by Florent Giroux, who had a terrific, fabulous, spectacular day. In fact, both of the Saturday cards, stake-wise, at Gulfstream and Oaklawn, really dominated in terms of riders. Tyler Gaffleone, White Abario, but also Family Way for Brendan Walsh. He wasn't on the other Walsh winner, but I take that back. He was on another Walsh winner, but not on My Filly Twirl, the Sanibel Island winner. But he was also on the 7/8. Sir Shackleton, the Sir Shackleton winner. Weyburn, who ran very well. The two non-three-year-old main track events, Fearless, of course, for Pletcher. But anyway, Gaffleone wins the Florida Derby. Here we go. The Orchid for Brendan on Family Way. The Sir Shackleton for Brendan on Weyburn. Crystal Cliffs wins the Sand Springs under Gaffleone for Grand Motion. And then he won a non-stake, too. Five winners for Tyler Gaffleone. And for Florent Giroux, Cyberknife in the Arkansas Derby, Ugiri, Gutty win in the Fantasy, the Shackleford daughter for Rudy Brissett. Brissett and Brian Lynch kind of had interesting parallels on Saturday, winning a prequel to Main Features, but then having their three-year-old hopefuls underperform or disappoint, however you want to phrase it. But Ugiri wins the Fantasy ahead of We the People, who found the assignment a little too taxing, third career start, etc., giving away experience, giving away, you know, obvious, you know, I hate the, you know, class test as a, because he's obviously a nice horse, but, you know, this is one of the reasons you don't relish you know, late starts with your good 3-year-olds. Getting some seasoning, and I mean, look at Cyberknife. Cyberknife has needed the seasoning because he's a handful. You could also make the case, actually, along the same lines. I mean, Charge It ran fine behind White Habario in that Florida Derby, and he also was in that same scenario as We the People, you know, having to grow up in a hurry, and he was a bit of a drunken sailor down the lane, anxious over the next few days to get some opinion, clarity, insight, viewpoint about the relative quality and the set of performances, because yeah, there's certainly a view out there that yeah, because of the synthetic topic when it comes to the Jeff Ruby winner, and you know, the way in which the horses finished in the Florida Derby, you know, the relative moderate figs that seem to be emanating and coming out of the races, it sure feels like Saturday's Santa Anita Derby and the already concluded Louisiana Derby right now feel like the, you know, the clubhouse leaders, even in advance of Saturday at Santa Anita, with the performance that anticipated, the confrontation being anticipated between Forbidden Kingdom and Messier. If you're not a Twitter user, I'll go over what I posted yesterday morning. Went through, laid out all the point standings scenarios. We'll go over that and give you an idea of where everybody stands going into Saturday. And, of course, the Lexington a week hence. And the Lexington has a chance to elevate a horse in. Absolutely will, considering that Todd Fincher's Bye Bye Bobby has got 20 and could get 20. Call Me Midnight and Dash Attack, and we'll talk to McPeak about Dash Attack. They've got 10 each. I made the comment that I think 30 points is going to be necessary to get in. And when you go through this, you'll see why. The horses that are right now sitting below, let's say, Smile Happy. Smile Happy's got 30. The assumption is that if you'd finished second in any of the 100-point races, 40 was going to get you in. So if you take that, you know, right now, assuming Classic Causeway, we'll see what Brian Lynch's thoughts are. They're smarting, undoubtedly. And whether they pull back and look for something shorter for him, that's what Papa Cap is going to do. Papa Cap, 24 points, sitting 19th technically on the list, but Mark Cassie told me yesterday they're going to refocus for the Pat Day Mile. So that puts a horse like Rich Strike. Eric Reed is really hopeful that Rich Strike could get in with 21. It's going to be close. He's certainly going to be pushed down after next week. I mean, the horses that are running that are already seemingly ensconced in the Derby field, Forbidden Kingdom, 54, Morello in the Wood, 50. Smile Happy sitting with 30 for the Bluegrass, would only have to really seemingly be first, second, third, fourth. And Mike Maker, who had himself a nice day at Turfway in his own right, with King Kaws winning that Kentucky Cup Classic, and he also had the Rushaway winner, that point of entry with Joe Bravo, Kittadan. But Grantham is sitting with 21. So Grantham, technically you know, be third would absolutely put him in good stead, but probably maybe even fourth. And that's why, you know, that's why there's some real volatility. And I will suggest that when they do the last Derby future pool, there's going to be some real speculation that's going to be necessary in terms of the ones that seem like they're already in. And for those of you that are curious, here's a quick rundown. Epicenter, White of Barrio, Tis the Bomb, assuming that Kenny, we'll find out in 10 minutes what Kenny's thoughts are. Cyberknife, the Japanese winner from abroad, Crown Pride. Simplification, who was okay. It wasn't as sharp as he was in the Fountain. Settled for third in the Florida Derby. We'll see about Classic Causeway. Slow Down Andy's got 60. Barber Road, one of the nice stories heading to Louisville, is going to be John Ortiz and the consistency of Barber Road. And if you want to if you want to make a Oaklawn to Churchill parallel, Barber Road feels a lot like Steppenwolfer. Just for those of you that are, you know, and that's what I'm talking. He's the kind of horse that is going to find his way. I mean, he's going to get a nice 3-year-old stake win somewhere along the line. Is it in Kentucky? It feels like things will have to break right. Gary West wrote a big piece that I saw at TVG yesterday. Gary West, you know, kind of reframing the whole discussion about pace and the lack of it in the Derby points era, and how compromised horses are that need to come from off the pace. And one thing that's interesting certainly is that, you know, we come out of these last couple of weekends where Cyberknife and Epicenter in particular, and White of Barrio too, you know, essentially were mid-pack stalkers, you know, at a certain point in the race. The interesting thing about all of them is they all seem to have, you know, some tactical speed. There's a lot of things about the way it's all shaping up that's going to be fun. I mean, I don't see how pending Forbidden Kingdom and Messier Saturday at Santa Anita, and that field right now, they've got those four that we've discussed. McLaren Vale I had on the list, but on Friday, Tom Ryan explaining that McLaren Vale is not going to run. So you got right now the two O'Neills, Happy Jack and Win the Day, Messier and Forbidden Kingdom. And similarly, the Oaks right now, Steve Anderson told me yesterday when somebody asked me to do the same treatment for the Oaks that I did for the Derby, I checked with Steve, you know, did you have anybody expected other than Adair Manor, who is one of the Baffert horses now with Tim Yakteen? And we'll get to Baffert getting started with this suspension. And ideally, getting through that, it will go a long way to, you know, taking a next step. And I mean, ideally would have been done, it would have been accepted, and, you know, wouldn't have drawn out the way it has. But Sean McCarthy getting kind of the rest of the string to run. And then there's some others for Tim Yakteen, basically the California trainees. I mean, obviously the Derby contenders were spread out already last week, but with this 90-day suspension and, you know, the other jurisdictions honoring that from Kentucky, what's the date? It was the 30, is it over 30 days or over 60 that you have to fully, you know, you can't have an assistant take over. You have to disband the barn. So that is happening. Meanwhile, right now, Adair Manor and in that Santa Anita Oaks, and Steve Anderson said maybe you know, another three or four. So both of the three-year-old races at Santa Anita are going to be light, but certainly the matchup with Messier and Forbid Kingdom is going to be highly anticipated. The Bluegrass and the Wood, and also the Gazelle, by the way. The Gazelle is going to have a very good filly field, because we got to talk about how great the fillies. I'm giving Derby all the attention, but the Oaks field with Secret Oak. I'll let Mig opine on the Contreras decision making and how that unfolded. She ran fine, and I think she, you know, she could have. I don't think she was beating Cyberknife, and I don't think Barbara Road was either. Barbara Road, you know, people said, "Oh, if you can get a clean trip, horses that come from downtown." This gets back to that whole argument, that discussion last week about horses that are in the Vanguard and may have one or two or three horses to negotiate versus those that have 12 horses to get around and through. You know, the explanation or the, you know, well, when Barber Road gets the clean trip, nobody's getting a clean trip. You're certainly not going to get a clean trip. I mean, I guess unless you're Mind That Bird or Street Sense, you know, and you somehow magically there isn't a straw in your path. But for the most part, you know, you're gonna end up like Icebox, and you're gonna have somebody's gonna back up into you. Somebody's gonna come over a half path and slow your momentum. I mean, that's the challenge of being an off the pace runner. As you can tell, I really enjoyed it. There's so many interesting parts of what we saw on Saturday. And, you know, that's the fun of what this lead up is. And how it, you know, how it is pictured. But as I think I was starting to angle toward, I mean, it feels like Epicenter, pending Saturday, particularly Forbidden Kingdom and Messier, that matchup feels like Epicenter is your Derby favorite and your Derby horse to beat as of right now. So we'll go from there. A few other, you know, I'm anxious to talk to Jay and Mike Welch, and who else was Dave Grenig. We'll talk to Dave obviously this week as we get close to Wood and Saturday's draw. There are some other issues here and there that inhibited horses. Unoho had a rough go of it, you know, getting banged into the fence. So there's plenty of dust to settle yet and to figure out. Before we start to reach for Kenny, to get things going. And in addition to Ken McPeak, we're going to talk to Jerry Hollendorfer. Couldn't get on the text machine fast enough this morning to get Jerry on. What a nice win for not just him and Dan Ward winning the carousel with Acting Out, but that Blame filly owned by Art Sherman and DZ Aiken, the famed deli empresario in San Diego, pretty cool, very excited and happy for that team. So we're going to talk to Jerry, and it's been way too long. And you know, Jerry, clicking along fine, but the stake opportunities have been a little less here the past, 18 months, give or take. So great to have a chance to talk to Jerry. I mentioned Mig, Al Gold, as promised. We'll talk to Al later. Unfortunately, Al and Hillary, they, and I think another. Not sure who else. They had another couple they were supposed to go with. They had plane trouble, and so they couldn't fly to Arkansas. So, unfortunately, Al could not be there. But guaranteed he took as much pleasure watching it and is as excited. And as I've said before, when we've talked to Al, it's Saratoga and elsewhere. Al Gold is one of the most deserving people in the game to have a horse like this. It for those that know a lot of the backstory and have discussed it with Al before, but Al confronted a situation years ago that a lot of people, basically would turn their back on the game and disgustedly walk away. And Al did not. And he's put lots of money in. He's had plenty of success. It's not that Al hasn't had nice horses, because he has. But this is next level nice. Couldn't be more excited for him for this. So I'm looking forward to that. And we'll probably get, I got a couple of other irons. I want to get Sappy Joseph in here, who not only won with White of Barrio, who you got to give credit, missed a little bit of training, and that was enough to be concerned, to be honest, and enough to be wary, even with that old school Alan Jerkin style blowout. The other day, I just thought, you don't want to be missing time going into a race like this. But he was very, very good. Very good. And, for those who haven't heard figures, if you're not, I put all the figures and stuff out yesterday morning, had a busy morning. White of Barrio, 96 buyer, Cyberknife, a 92, 94 for Tiz the Mom. So those were your three winners. Arguably, by the way, I hinted about the Oaks and how great it's going to be. Secret Oath fans, you may have gotten, something of a price bonus given the performance of Kathleen O. And it feels like Kathleen O is your Oaks favorite, or Echo Zulu, or Secret Oath. I mean, the three of them are going to vie for favoritism. The line makers, I suppose, does Travis make the line? We should check in with Travis. I suppose Echo Zulu gets the slight nod because of being the champion, I guess. It's going to be very interesting to see how those three get priced. The Oaks is shaping up as good a scenario as you could possibly want or expect. And you're going to get Ashland and Gazelle and Santa Anita Oaks results that only augment it. And Venti Valentine, the New York bred, There's a New York bred lurking in every conversation. Venti Valentine for George Ebro. She's serious. There's nothing wrong with her. So Kathleen O, though, with Shug and the wonderful story with the Wingate stable, the older retired broker, and in fact, I think he's been retired long enough to say that he worked for Payne Weber, Jackson, and Curtis. So it's a really good story, and she's a She is a runner. Let's put it that way. Kathleen O, very, very serious. And unique situation to have undefeated Oaks fillies like this in her and Echo Zulu. So should be a lot of fun. And let's see who else adds to the lineup, because Todd's got Nest coming back for a tightener in the Ashland. Awake at Midnight for O'Neill. We'll talk to Kenny about Cocktail Moments. And then the Gazelle, classy addition for Todd as well. Bill Morey's got that Shotgun Hottie. She's done very little wrong. So, and we'll see what how the Oaks bubbles up. So I've got tons here to discuss when it comes to the big features, and we got tons more recapping, and got to mention Brian Lynch with Phantom Currency. How about that? Brings a horse back, what, a year plus? Was super, super terrific in the Appleton. Unbelievable. Just kept going. Some very interesting results at Gulfstream. And just enough to keep it interesting and make the multis worthwhile. The most worthwhile multi of the weekend. You see what the cross country paid? The cross country had something very unusual. He basically had five third choices. Five third choices, essentially. Folsom was the fourth choice, but only by like 20 cents. But acting out, 1540 as the third choice in the carousel. Forewarned, I haven't mentioned Uriah St. Louis. How about, I mean, if you couldn't see him, if you could not see that horse crane his neck and extend his neck under Haddock, that was something to win the Excelsior. Paid 1140, forewarned. Uriah St. Louis just keeps winning stakes. It's the Chris Carter of trainers. Folsom, 1880. Forewarned was third choice in a four-horse field. Folsom, 1880. Ugiri, third choice, 1020. Cyberknife, third choice, 1360. 22,182 is what the cross-country pick five paid. Yeah, I mean that was tough. That was a challenge to put them to get them on one ticket. I didn't see the handle number. I'm gonna guess that there were four winners, right? Maybe four or five. Let's see if I've got that on the last leg would have been the Arkansas Derby, but a lot of times it doesn't show up on the chart. All right. I could keep talking like this and going over this stuff for right straight through till Mig joins us. But let me reach for Kenny, because we got plenty to discuss with Ken. And, he's got a very tough decision with the Magdalena. What do you do? Do you go to the Irish? What has he got? The Irish Guineas, the 2000 Guineas, the Epsom Derby. The list is endless. there's a million things that makes me think of a great the great line in the Roger Moore Bond films, when it's Man with the Golden Gun. When M says, we got this bullet with your number on it, and he says, well, who would want to kill me? And M says, furious chefs, jealous husbands, humiliated tailors, the list is endless. It's one of my favorite lines. And I think I may have gotten it in the wrong order, but those of you that know the scene, you're laughing. I know you are. I love that. All right, let's get Kenny in here, and it's always fun to talk to Ken McPeak. Oh no, this is I made a mistake here. I think I did a FaceTimer. I did. That was bad. All right, let's try again. Today's the last day that we will have to do the phone calling ourselves. The phone module came back, and so tomorrow Casey takes back over making the calls. Now, of course, okay, let's try one more time. There we go. All right. All right. My fault. Kenny McPeak is joining us. And Kenny, not only do we have to discuss the very nice results at Turfway, but you got a huge weekend coming up. First of all, congratulations on Tis the Bomb's win with authority in the Ruby. And then, of course, earlier you'd won the Latonia with Crazy Beautiful, her first try on synthetic.
Yeah, it was a good day for sure.
That I'd say the least. Let's talk about Tis the Bomb, and you know all the potential, the potentialities, as it were. Give us some thoughts about what you saw and what you do in terms of making an evaluation about where you go with him.
Well, he was ultra impressive, and you know, he seems to be a horse that certainly is very adaptable. But you know. The initial reaction after the race, and there's some logistics issues taking him to Europe initially, but I think he's going to run the Kentucky Derby. This horse, he's done well, and he's here, and he's going to get in, and he's punched his ticket. So that's probably the decision. I can't see that changing. You know, the 2,000 guineas is a race that I would have loved to have attempted, but. There were some problems with logistics and licensing and things like that. And even if he were to run well in the Kentucky Derby and he justifies it, I would love to take him to English Derby and the Irish Derby because I think he's a horse that'll handle even more ground. So, you know, look, fingers crossed this horse stays healthy because he's, and up to this point, he's been an easy keeper. And he could take us on, you know, maybe a unprecedented ride.
Appreciate the clarity of where you stand, and talk a little bit, and you and I have discussed this for years, actually, because you and Mark Cassie principally, you know, move horses from synthetic to dirt and also with turf thrown in, you know, very freely. What gives you confidence about him, and in general, what's your approach? What do you look for that says to you a horse like this is going to translate from turf and synthetic successfully at the highest level on dirt?
Well, I mean, Churchill's a different surface. The Gulfstream surface is a heavy sand, and the kickback's pretty significant, and he didn't handle that at all. You know, I've had to list the horses over my career that have run on anything, and I think sometimes we suffer from analysis paralysis when you pigeonhole a horse as always strictly a grass horse, or strictly a dirt horse, or strictly a synthetic horse. A good horse will run over anything most of the time, and sometimes it's more class level than it is surface. And you know, Frack Daddy was a horse that ran over all surfaces. A horse that I bought, Einstein. One on anything, you know. Obviously, Crazy Beautiful's now done it, and then Tis the Bomb. But you know, look, you don't get many opportunities, and I think staying in the 3-year-old, you know, his generation makes it easier too. But he handled Kentucky Downs, and you know, it remains to be seen whether he can handle a 20-horse field at Churchill Downs, but. Kentucky Downs is very similar to Epsom Downs. And these are fun races to attend and participate.
In terms of his development, too, because obviously it would take one more forward step from this point, you would sense.
You mean for the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's. I mean, look, every horse has to find another level Kentucky Derby day, and 19 won't. But the fact that logistically it's pretty easy setup for us, and he's trained there a lot. This horse, if anybody got a chance to look at him, and I don't know whether the camera spotted him in the paddock, this horse has eagle eyes when he's in the race and being saddled and preparing. I mean, he's so smart. And he looked around and basically said, I'm here, I'm conquering. And he doesn't get washy. Nothing flinches. And it's exciting. It's exciting. I mean, what's that, his fourth stake race on how many different tracks? So let's see what else he can handle.
Well, certainly the comments also from Brian Hernandez Jr. and in his hands, certainly. I mean, Brian makes so many decisions. We talk about this all the time. In fact, Jay Privman, I don't think Brian could have a better publicist than Jay Privman, who considers Brian Hernandez Jr. as good and as underrated as any rider in the country. I thought his comments were very promising about the potential to, you know, compete successfully in the Derby.
Well, you know, Brian's a very low-key guy. What I like about him most is that he's so professional and workmanlike, and horses travel well underneath him. And, you know, people they look for a strong rider, this and that. In this day and age, especially with the reduced use of the whip, you want a horse or a jockey that really horses are happy underneath. And I think Brian's really good at that, and that's why I've gravitated to using him. And we go different paths during the winter, but over the last several years, we've pulled back together, and his agent and I, put our heads together going into the spring season, and he'll come over if I need him to. And, you know, he's a consummate family man too, which is, you know, keeps the distractions away. And then the other element that people don't realize is that Brian is a student of every race. He it's not unusual for him to study the form, watch the races, watch the replays, know his competition. And you really don't have to say a lot. And, you know, it's reminiscent, and these are big shoes to fill. It's reminiscent of Pat Day. Pat Day did a lot of that. Pat Day didn't have he was quiet and quiet on a horse, and horses ran for him. And, you know, certainly at Churchill Downs, Brian's history and results there, I'm not sure where he ranks all time, but he's got to be, I'm sure he's in the top 20, but probably higher than that. I've not looked that up, but it gives me a lot of confidence using him over there.
Well, he's out of a Tisnow mare, so certainly every indication so far, and the way he moves and the way he's been finishing, every indication is that the extra furlong is not going to be an issue. Remind everybody, Kenny, and in fact, we talked about this, I think, probably after... I guess I forget when. I guess it was probably after Breeders' Cup, maybe. I don't know, or after the Bourbon. And you talked about spending a little bit, you know, reaching a little deeper in the pocket for this horse when you bought him.
Well, he was the sire at the time. Hit at a Bomb was, I think, maybe in a bit of a valley, but him as a physical was outstanding. He was outstanding, and. You know, that's my MO. I mean, I buy the physical, and he checked all the boxes, and I was fortunate that we had a client that stepped in there and said, go get him. And we had to fight for him. There were some good people, really sharp people that were after him at the Fasig sale. And, you know, the Fasig Tipton sale, I mean, between him and, you know, running, Smile Happy came out of the Fasig sale too, another stallion that people were kind of in a valley on. Fasig does a great job bringing the physicals to auction. Every summer we get to go over there and horses. They got an excellent team that handles the horses they present in July. And Tis the Bomb and Smile Happy are two perfect examples.
Well, now 5 of 8 and over $1 million in earnings. The resume continues to build, wins the Jeff Ruby. Does this come with a healthy Jeff Ruby gift card?
You know, I don't know. I know Jeff and the list of his friends. But he was worried about whether I wasn't going to run him in the Kentucky Derby, but I sent him a text post-race to let him know that we would be. He didn't respond, but that's normal for him. But Mike Battaglia, who's partners and pals with Jeff, responded. That was great. And then, yeah, I've knocked on the door in the Jeff, in the, well, for years we called it the Spiral.
Yeah.
And then it was the Jim Beam. And, you know, it's been a list of races. And I think Jerry Carroll gets most of credit for elevating that race, certainly on the national level. And when I was a young trainer, I was stabled almost 10 winners at Latonia, first three, and then it became Turfway when Jerry transformed it. And I would watch all the top horses come over, and of course Wayne Lucas won it a lot, and I was like, oh, I want to win that race. I'd like to win that race. And I froze my tail off up there at Latonia and Turfway back in the 80s. And and I'd been second three times, so I got to check that box, so I was real pleased with that.
Very nice. Nice. Well, and without looking, I would have guessed that you had a Spiral GalleryFurniture.com Jim Beam win previously. So I didn't realize that.
Just several seconds.
Very nice.
Tejano Run was second. Wild Desert horse ended up winning.
Oh, yeah.
He was second. And I was second with another colt, Blue Ridge Traveler. But, it's a... Like I said, I cut my teeth up at Turfway
nice.
In Latonia back when I was a young trainer. You know, otherwise I'm an overnight success.
Exactly. Talk. let's talk about, before we talk about the weekend, what about Crazy Beautiful? And this kind of opens maybe a couple of different avenues. Second off the layoff after the Royal Delta try, where she ran evenly. It was a decent enough comeback. What do you do now with the four-year-old?
She wasn't ready for the Royal Delta. I actually told the racing office they wanted her in, and I'd nominated her, but she really was a couple of works short. And then, there, of course, Latrushka was in there, which is, you know, you're wrestling Big Bear there. But, you know, this was a race that was right up her alley, and she just outclassed that group, I think. And she's probably going to come back in the Double Dog Dare, which is a shift back to the dirt. Of course, there won't be any synthetic after Turfway closes, but she's very versatile, and she's 17,000 or 16,000 from being a millionaire herself. So I'd like to think we could go back in the Double Dog Dare, Keeneland, and check that box. But she's just such a great filly to be around. It's a great name, isn't it?
Yeah.
My wife named that filly, and I always say she named her after herself. Because she is crazy beautiful. But I'm not sure which is she's crazy first or beautiful second.
Well, you know, and anyway. What's interesting about her, too, I mean, given last year, There's any number of places. I mean, the success at Delaware, you would think that the Del Cap could be on the agenda. You know, she ran well in that overnight at Churchill. She's ran well enough, I thought, in the Valley View last year, last fall, and on yielding turf. Pretty good experience there. In fact, she's got a win and a second and two turf tries in her career. So there's really very little she can't do.
The grade ones have been elusive for her. You know, it's unfortunate, but she's really struggled when we've lifted her up and tried that top level. And, you know, that's, maybe she'll get a chance, to you know, check that box this year. But she's really tough when you put her in a grade two or grade three. And let's see if we can get that grade one before the year's out. I'd love that for her.
Crazy Beautiful, the Liam's Map filly out of the Indian Charlie Mare, Indian Burn, bred by Carolyn Vogel. Kenny, before I ask you about the weekend coming up and actually the next two weekends at Keeneland particularly, but quick thoughts about King Fury's try in the Classic Cup and in the Cup Classic and in Sandstone in the Bourbonnet.
Yeah, I'm miffed by King Fury's race. I thought that horse would win this weekend, and I don't know if he didn't handle the synthetic. Seemed like he started struggling and he got trapped down inside. I'm not sure he liked being down inside, but the expectation was is that he would win. He had been working like a bear all winter and just didn't fire and scoped okay post race. So that was kind of a head scratcher. But We're going to go over him real good, and then likely he'll come back in the Ben Ally at Keeneland. I believe that's the name of the race. Mm-hmm. And that's on the 23rd of April. And that's really the spot that he belongs. The Ben Ally ought to be an ideal spot for him. And then who else did you ask for?
Sandstone, who had a bit of a look going into the Oaks.
She lost her shoe in the post parade.
Oh, Jesus.
And I don't know if that's a huge excuse, but it certainly didn't help.
No.
And Brian seemed to think that she stumbled and clipped it off. And so we're just going to regroup with her and try to find a spot. I may run her in the 8 bells at Churchill. I'm not sure she wants to sprint like that, but that's a good, I think it's a grade 3 or a listed stake at this stage. And runs on May 6th, so the timing's good. And there's a chance that I would wait for maybe the Black-Eyed Susan and Pimlico, which gives her a little more time. And we've had a hard time getting her to bloom, per se, this year. She's been a good filly, but I mean, last year she had a really good season, but we haven't gotten her all 100% yet.
I had not realized, actually, until looking back now, you know, I saw the running of the race, but I hadn't watched the board leading up. I didn't realize she took the kind of money she did. She went off a 3-2.
Yeah, you know, the expectation she would outclass that group, and just didn't happen. So,
well,
never easy this game.
Well, it's a little presumptuous to think. I mean, she's been away since the Goldenrod. She was given away all kinds of recency. And not to mention first time synthetic and then whatever other, like you've just mentioned, with the shoe. So you'll turn around and regroup.
Yep.
There you go.
Regroup, brother.
Got to ask about some other things that have happened in addition to these successes. You got some big things happening the next couple of weekends. Let's talk about Smile Happy first.
I've been sitting on this horse like a keg of dynamite. I didn't want to over-race him going into the Triple Crown races because I think he'll fit in all those. I could have made a case to run him back in March without any trouble. We had – actually, I think the Louisiana Derby would have been an ideal spot, but the problem with that was we were going to have to ship him across a couple states there, and I didn't want the stress of him shipping. Plus, we had – Rattle and Roll for that race, which I thought that surface and ground would be ideal. Epicenter was very impressive, so maybe it was fortuitous we didn't go. And then the other option was, well, maybe to take him to Tampa, but I just decided to sit and wait on him. I didn't want to run him in Florida because the clients were Kentucky. They're from here in Louisville, and they've got a large group of people that are going to be coming, and honestly I wanted to win another bluegrass. This is a really, really good horse, and he's actually trucking north today. He's actually going to go from Gulfstream to Silverleaf Hills, our training center in Ocala, and then tomorrow go from there all the way up, and splits a trip up and a little less stressful on the horses, in my opinion. But he is a loaded gun, and it's going to take a tough horse to beat him.
The field right now, for those that haven't seen the perspective list, Smile Happy, who already comes in with 30 points, Dwayne Lucas, Ethereal Road, as he tries to get a companion, given that the filly is going to stay in Oaks' company. Chad Brown sends 20 points for Ethereal, Zandon for Chad Brown. Todd's got Emmanuel, Mike Maker, 21 points for Grantham. Looking to lock up a spot. Black Adder for Rudy Brissett would need to finish first or second. Kelly Breen, I reached out to yesterday. He has not made a decision about the wood or the bluegrass yet. So that's pending, but he's got potentially could be there. Mark Cassie's got Golden Glider and Volcanic. And you do need a program to keep track of your gliders with Cassie, because he's also got one called Glider. who's running in the Lexington? And regarding the Lexington, how's Dash Attack done since we saw him last?
He's done well. He you know, we decided not to pursue the Arkansas Derby with that horse because he's, it's two, the last two races, we didn't find another gear for him down there. Although I think he, kind of thinking he might not have liked that track as well as we thought, although he had two early wins there. But, you know, I wanted to change surfaces. He's going to run in the Lexington for sure, it looks like. And he had a nice little maintenance breeze this past weekend. And he'll get another one this coming weekend. Flavian Pratt's going to ride him, which the owners are excited about, and so am I. And, you know, give him a run at Keeneland. I've won the Lexington a couple times. And there's a chance that Rattle and Roll could also run in the Lexington.
Well,
so we could have a couple in there.
Well, and that is a companion question, because Rattle and Roll, when you wrapped up after Louisiana Derby, your inclination was to basically set him aside and point for Preakness.
Yeah, we could do both. There's also there's a race at Oaklawn called the Oaklawn Stakes,
right?
That's on the 23rd of April, and we could utilize that as a prep to take him to Baltimore. And I'm not out of the thought that, you know, look, if he got enough points to let him give him a run in the Derby, I think he is a classic mile and a quarter horse. Although, you know, the Epicenter was just so impressive and really, I didn't have an excuse coming out of the race. I think I got beat 7 lengths. I didn't have an excuse. And Epicenter rated off, and we thought maybe there'd be some pace, and that didn't happen. But, you know, all these are, this is how, you know, I've said it before on your show, these are high level problems, and we'll sort through them best we can.
Well, Rattle and Roll is a connect for those that have forgotten, and this is the other horse for Lucky Seven, who certainly has, you know, had a nice run with these two nice colts.
On the physicals, this horse is he's a big grinder. I think he's a horse that he needs a pace set up, and he might need an off track. And so how do you get that? I mean, in the Derby, there typically is some semblance of pace, whether it's earlier in the middle or you know, jocks moving in the second turn, and next thing you know, a horse comes out of the clouds. Could he do that? Yeah, you know what? He could. He definitely got to find another gear, speed figure wise. And, you know, right now it's kind of up in the air. He'd be a long shot, but, you know, let's see how Smile Happy runs. And if we need to Rattle and Roll, we hopefully get in. And like I said, we're not going to press it. We'll just have to see how it goes.
Well, certainly with Smile Happy getting ready for Saturday at Keeneland in the Bluegrass, and with Rattle and Roll lurking, the highfalutin potential of having two Derby starters for the Macklins, that remains alive. That distinct can still a possibility. Kenny, what about Cocktail Moments? Let's go to the Oak side of the ledger.
She's going to get a run in the Ashland. I wanted to get her north. She has done really, really well, and yeah, we're gonna give her a run in there. I mean, she's really big, strong filly, and kind of remains to be seen whether she, I mean, she's had a couple thirds in stakes company, and there's the notion that the Ashland's not going to be a big field, and the incentive for grade one black type for any filly's always there. So we're looking forward to giving her a shot, and you know, she's got some things to prove yet, but I'm interested to see how that field unfolds and what kind of horses land in there.
Well, right, and you said in terms of field size, it does not look like it's going to be that big. But frankly, and I was very curious about this myself yesterday when I put together these point, this point structure, and the Ashland, the last 5 years, has not had more than eight, and typically six or seven. And so right now, Nest, Awake at Midnight, Cocktail Moments, Bob Hess with Miss Betty B, Wesley with Happy Soul, and Brad Cox has got Interstate Daydream. So right now there's six that Keeneland's got listed as probables.
You know, the calendar for the Phillies is cockeyed, if you ask me. I mean, there really isn't a... It just doesn't seem... It seems like they all fall on top of each other. I'm going to vent a little bit here. So the Gulfstream race is a great race. I've won that two years in a row until this season. I didn't have a participant. So the Gulfstream Park Oaks is the end of March. And then you've got the Fantasy, which fell on the 2nd of April. And then I'm not sure the race is in New York because we don't head up there for those. But there's no race at Tampa. And then the Fairgrounds Oaks ran, what is it?
About 2 weeks ago. A
couple of weekends ago. Yep. So that the timing there's off, as you can't run in the Fairgrounds Oaks, the Gulfstream Park Oaks, the Fantasy, and the Ashland. The Ashland tends to get a little bit left out, but it's a grade one, so it's certainly not chopped liver. And then I've actually begged Allison DeLuca at Tampa. We need a series. Actually, I've asked Gulfstream and that. We need a series of three-year-old filly races that are two turns that run the first of the month during the winter that leads you into the spring, because these would be what I call launching pads for Kentucky Oaks fillies. But you've got one small race, I think it's called the Suncoast at Tampa,
right.
Two turns.
Yep.
Then you've got the Florida Oaks, which is a turf race.
Right.
And then at Gulfstream, you've got the Devona Dale, which is a one-turn mile, which we were third in. And then the race that leads into that is, I'm drawing a blank, I've won it. It's a 7/8 race. So they're just really not... It's not a great pattern to set up.
Right.
And so I think it leaves, especially by the end of March, 1st of April, it dilutes some of these races and everything's spread out. Now, Secret Oath took a shot in the Arkansas Derby, so you checked her out, and she'd be the favorite, I suppose, for the Kentucky Oaks. And if she'd gone to the Ashland, she'd probably checked in there. But thank goodness she didn't, so we'll run in the Ashland.
Well, it looks, I mean, from a point standpoint, you got 12 coming in, and so even a third will pretty much lock her up as an Oaks runner. We'll get her into the field. There's much less of a volatile scenario for the Oaks as there is for the Derby. And, you know, Kenny, I don't know if you want to vent on the first chance we've talked since you brought up the topic. And, in fact, Chuck Simon echoed your sentiments about level weights in these run-ups for the Derby.
Well, they need to be level weights in Colts and Phillies. The Arkansas Derby didn't run level weights. And, did Cyberknife get weight? I think he did. I can't remember, but I remember looking at it, and there were those that were carrying high weight, and there were those that got 5 pounds less. And I talked to Pat Pope about it. He's a really good racing secretary, and he realizes that it is an issue, and I think he's going to address it next season. And all these races should be equal weights, and the Louisiana Derby ran equal weights, which we participated in with Rattle and Roll. And so you really do get a really good barometer of your horse on equal weights. And then Tis the Bomb had to give weight to win the Battaglia, but he ran equal weights in the Ruby. So that worked well too. So I don't know. I mean, you want to see the best horses win, and I don't think these aren't allowance races anymore. They're
right.
They're not allowance weighted, and their importance is dramatic. And you know, just a head or a bob or a half length here or there is a difference in maybe a horse that was carrying the weight getting in or not getting in. The Derby, and so anyway, it's just an opinion. Certainly. controversial one, so it is what it is.
No, it's a good discussion. I brought it up with Rick Hammerly, and Hammer explained the racing office, the racing office approach to this and the collective. It is something that the racing secretary meeting, and I suppose the graded state committee, and even that catalog guidelines committee, that they all should have they should all have a should all kind of coalesce around each other's. I mean, the topic cuts across all those areas. I thought it was a very worthwhile discussion over the winter. And for the record, Cyberknife carried 119. The high weights were Unoho off of the Rebel win, and Kavad, who had to pack 122 in here. So it.
And I get the racing secretary's position, and. And I talked to Mike Lakow about it too. You know, it is better for them to put more horses into the field. And does 3 pounds or 5 pounds make a difference? It might. I mean, is it going to incentivize a guy to run, whether or not running? I don't think it does. I don't think trainers go, oh, I can get 5 pounds, I'm going to jump in the Florida Derby or the, you know, Arkansas Derby. I think they legitimately want to know that their horse fits, and it's certainly a big deal to win those. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. It's just something that I saw and something I mentioned.
No, it was good. It promoted a very worthwhile conversation. One more worthwhile point to make or to bring out. Keeneland, always one of your favorite meets, whether it be spring or fall. Who else should we look out for? I'm sure there's a couple of maiden potential players. Who are we watching for in the next 2 or 3 weeks?
Creative Minister. Horse that ran really well going 7/8 at Gulfstream, and we've been waiting for opening week at Keeneland. They're going to need a big bear to wrestle him. He's a really nice horse, and you might find him in some of the summer 3-year-old stakes if my intuition's right. Admittedly, I've got a lot of horses that are lined up for the Keeneland meet. It's been a meet that's certainly home for me, and we're bringing them in from everywhere for it. And some horses I think will be spot on, and some might need a race, but it'll be an exciting spring overall.
No doubt. And an exciting couple of weekends coming up. Smile Happy in the Bluegrass, Cocktail Moments in the Ashland, Dash Attack, maybe in the Lexington the week after. Kenny, there's a real chance I could talk to you again next Monday.
No problem.
Kenny McPeak, everybody. And right now, Kenny, I see that people have to follow you at McPeak Racing right now.
You know, it's weird. My Twitter account got hacked.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that happened, but I guess I didn't have a complicated enough password. But anyway, so it got hacked. And then there's been a few what I'd call copycat accounts. And I think they think I was a copycat account. So my Twitter account's been permanently deleted or suspended. And I don't know. I've sent several emails.
Oh,
like,
forget it. They're useless. They're useless.
Yeah. But anyway, I don't much do anything controversial. My quote on there is stay positive and troll to my face if you're man enough. but anyway, kind of a weird deal.
All right. Well, I'm alerting everybody.
I'm learning Instagram, and I've got the girl that works for me trying to figure out how, if there's a human behind Twitter that actually can have some sense, because I had almost 20,000 followers.
I know.
But yeah, that's a weird deal. I don't get. I've actually kind of given up that, that they won't answer. So, but I haven't done anything. I swear. I didn't do anything.
Well,
I think they think it's a copycat account.
Well, McPeak Racing, which was parallel, and then the Kenny McPeak account kind of sort of had the momentum, so you really haven't used McPeak Racing much, but there's also the Magdalena Racing account as well. So there's a lot of ways to follow Kenny.
Yeah, well, like I said, that really the only one I use is that Kenny McPeak. But you know, right now we're on the bench. We're in jail.
you got Twitter jail. Twitter jail is right. Or Kenny, well
it's
done.
Actually, a bit of a relief sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Spend too much time on the damn thing anyway. And I'm actually kind of like, well, you know, whatever. Maybe it is fortuitous that they turned me off. I don't know what I did. I mean, I think I posted a replay of a horse running bad or something.
Ooh, well, you know what? That actually can be a problem sometimes. If a copyright holder gets on you and makes a complaint, they'll turn around and backslap you.
I haven't done any of that. I think I posted three times in the month. And they were usually videos of Rattle and Roll getting a bath or something, or Smile Happy galloping.
then I guess that wasn't...
I call it with my wife. Says, what are you looking at on your computer? It says, horse porn, sweetie.
Exactly. Horse porn. Well, bath.
I'll be looking at videos of horses in Argentinian sales and you know, galloping videos and stuff like that. But I actually bought three horses in Argentina recently and a yearling. So I actually bought eight out of Argentina recently.
Wow.
Because the market's actually good, if you want to talk about that for a minute. And we bought like a grade two winner, a couple of impressive fillies, and then some young horses. And I bought three yearlings that similar to when I bought Einstein in Brazil.
Right.
But we're going to do the importation of those, and we're going to partner out a couple of the Argentinian fillies if anybody out there is interested in that. Susan Moulton, same owner of Sandstone,
sure.
Others, she took one of the Argentinian fillies we acquired, and then we've got two others, a colt and a filly, that we're going to Magdalena partnership. So if anybody's interested in that, just punch out office at McPeakRacing.com. We'll give them the details. But that's kind of fun. You know, you never know.
No, and you bring up, you mentioned, you know, the market. I saw you for a minute. We didn't get a chance to talk at OBS, but here we are, a little bit of a breather before everybody goes back to Ocala for April for the big sale. Any quick insights, who you're most impressed with on the breezes and physicals?
Well, I don't participate in the two-year-old and training sales. I don't like them. I've had so much luck with yearlings, and I think that's my niche. And you know, I just think that the process of the two-year-old sales is a little bit, it's not for me. And then the young horses that we've got in Florida, I mean, we've got a Galileo colt that we bought in Europe and a Franco colt we bought in Europe, and there's you know, a list. The Mendelsons look really good. The stallion that I think is under the radar is Cloud Computing.
Hmm.
I've got three Cloud Computings that I think are really good.
Nice.
Collected.
Yeah.
I've got four Collecteds down in Ocala, and they're big, strong individuals. I think Airdrie's onto something there. And I'm sure I'm missing some, but it's a good, solid group down there this winter. And Robbie Alvarado's down there helping get them ready.
Yeah.
Him and Dominic Brennan working together. And they're getting those young horses ready for spring. And we're not going to rush any of them up. We're going to let Wesley win all the 4.5s and 5.5s, and then we'll start getting a little more serious when they stretch out like normal. And, yeah, it should be an exciting year. A lot of good stake horses in the barn already, and we've sold most of our average. I claim a lot of them off of me, which is okay. So, yeah, spring's here.
It is. And Keeneland always the harbinger, like a robin. Kenny McPeak, everybody, and you got a lot of notes for everybody to digest. Kenny, well done, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
Kenny McPeak, everybody.
See you at the races.
You bet. Kenny, and there we go. That was great. You got a ton, including, for those of you that are careful listeners, when we ask about horses and when somebody like Ken doesn't have to doesn't have to think to respond. Creative minister was the snap answer. That was pretty clear, right? Here, let me give you a quick glance. It's a creative cause for Fern Circle and Back Racing, and debuted in March at Gulfstream at the beginning of the month. Was in the race that produced, oh, and just got necked by Felix. That was the Ralph Nix, that Cupid colt. And that was, but that was still a pretty nice, and actually took money too, so I guess it won't be a surprise, but who knows, when you put together a new field at Keeneland, could be a little different. Let's take a break. Rich Migliore is going to join us next, then Al Gold, Jerry Hollendorfer, and more at the races, recapping a huge weekend, lots to do. Stay with us.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super by 99. Farm. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. About 10 minutes, a little bit more, into hour two. And Rich Migliore is standing by, and Rich will be standing by.